Hello and welcome to the 2020 F1 Strategy Report, powered by Apex Race Manager, the mobile race management simulator. My name's Michael Laminato, and this is Round 7, the Belgian Grand Prix. It was another win for Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes in a race of potential and what-ifs on the strategy front, with an early safety car neutralising almost everyone's race and turning the Grand Prix into a procession of tyre management. Pierre Gasly was just about the only driver to try something different, and his contra-strategy was rewarded with a decent haul of points. But further down the field, there was no strategy that could save Ferrari, which fumbled its way to its worst race in a decade, painfully slow and out of the points. To debrief the race that could have been, I'm joined by Autosport F1 reporter and friend of the show, Luke Smith. Luke, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Michael. Yeah, I've sort of maybe recovered from that snooze fest that we had to go through yesterday. Definitely not the most exciting Formula One race that we've had in recent memory, I think. It's not much to really dig into in terms of wild on-track action or overtakes or anything like that. But still plenty of good talking points, I think, came out of the weekend. And I'm doing okay, though. How are you?
I'm good. I'm like you, survived, I guess, the snore fest. It was a little bit later in my time zone, so there definitely was a battle on my hands to stick around with that one. But look, even if we don't have heaps to talk about, given the situation, maybe we can even delve into a hypothetical strategy report podcast. We'll see how we go. But let's set the background anyway, because this, of course, is a racetrack. Obviously, everyone looks forward to. It's a historic circuit, a very pretty to look at circuit. Certainly, you get that impression from the TV. One of the few circuits, I think, you do get a nice impression from the television, at least anyway. But it is, in some senses, deceptively difficult, because we talk about this being a track that's just very fast and we see a lot of shots of very long straights and slipstream overtaking, but getting the balance right for car setup is quite difficult, as several teams showed.
Yeah, it is, yeah, because you've really got, I think, strike the balance between, do you want to go for a low downforce, trimmed out setup that'll do you good for the first and third sectors? And we saw a team such as Renault, I think they did that very, very effectively and were hitting some very, very high speed trap speeds and sort of getting towards the end of the Kemmel straight. Or do you want to sort of put more of your eggs in sector two as a basket? Like, do you want to sort of try and go for that higher downforce, really get the car working through the twisty stuff? That's something Mercedes was able to do very, very effectively, just mainly because just the power unit is so good and the car is so strong in a straight line anyway. They can whack on a load of downforce and still be pretty respectable. They did very, very well sort of hitting that compromise. And that is always a challenge. And I think the other thing that teams were looking at for this weekend was the tyre selection from Pirelli. So we went a step softer than what we've seen recently to sort of the 70th anniversary Grand Prix tyre picks, which I'm sure that strategy report was absolutely fantastic, because there'd been so much to talk about. And I think it may be sort of, there were hopes that, okay, if we go back to that kind of tyre selection, like, could that give a repeat? Could we see sort of Max Verstappen and Red Bull come into contention once again? And it just didn't work out that way, unfortunately.
There were some reasons, if you just look at the surface of the results, to think that this wasn't a dominant Mercedes win. You know, we've seen some massive Mercedes wins in our time in what's approaching a decade, I guess, which is terrifying to think. And, you know, even Paul Lewis Hamilton was flawless, but it was half a second. And there's probably more of an argument to make that Valtteri Bottas underperformed a little bit necessarily. So, but then when you do dive down into it, and you touched on it there, Mercedes was the high downforce setup car in this situation, whereas Red Bull Racing was the lower one. It really just underlines how powerful that engine is. We're going to get into talk, I guess, in the next couple of weeks more broadly about qualifying engine modes and all that kind of thing. But is under the surface this actually a more terrifying Mercedes win than it perhaps looks?
Yeah, I would agree with that, I think, because it's a race that was heavy tyre management, as we'll get into, just because of the early pit stop, and everyone had to make a one-stop strategy work. So therefore, they weren't ever really going to push. Like, there was never really a need to. There were a couple of times we heard over the radio that Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas got told, okay, push now, and just to open that gap up a little bit to Max Verstappen. But otherwise, it was all very much in hand and very in control. And even towards the end, when both drivers were reporting a few vibrations or a little bit of an issue with their tyres, they were still, like, they were okay. And Hamilton said after the race, like, the tyre was probably all right in the end. So it's I would agree with that. Like, I think this, the W11 car, I think it's just a I think it will end up being the greatest F1 car in F1 history if the rest of the season goes as, and next year, of course, go as it's seeming like it will. And I think it's weekends like this where, yeah, there's no like 20-second margin or anything over the field, but at no point did they ever really, really stretch the legs of that car, I don't think, because they didn't have to and they didn't need to. So, yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Sort of very deceptively dominant from Mercedes.
I feel like we're saying all of these things every year, though. I feel like every year is Mercedes' best car, but I suppose that does speak to the fact they do raise the bar pretty much every season at this point. This race was predicated or decided, I suppose, on a couple of different moments. One was the start, Lewis Hamilton accidentally getting a great exit from La Source by making a mistake, really, which forced Valtteri Bottas to back off a little bit and lost some momentum up to that critical Lacoum braking section, which meant that at least for the first part of this race, the battle for the lead was done. Then, of course, there was subsequently the safety car restart, and we'll talk about the safety car in a moment, that Hamilton aced. But then there was this long final stint, and we started to see the tyres go off a little bit, particularly on the Mercedes cars. Lewis Hamilton talking about having no grip, having no tyres, as he occasionally tends to in a race. It's not the first time we've seen Mercedes have these tyre troubles, of course. They've had some fairly significant ones in recent races, and you could almost argue it's a little bit of a trait of that car to wear its tyres quite heavily. Is this grabbing it too much? Is it too ambitious to say that this might be, if there is one, a Mercedes weak spot?
I think every week that Mercedes have a slight wobble, we're like, oh, there's a weakness. Finally, we found something in the W11 that doesn't work as it should. But no, I think it's... I think what happened at Silverstone with the late tyre failures, I think that has been something that hit Mercedes hard. Like, even though they still won that race remarkably with Lewis Hamilton on three wheels, they, because of the way Mercedes learns from its defeats and really learns lessons, it that is like at the back of its mind right the way through, I think, the rest of this season. Now it will be. So I think there was just that concern of, oh, what if there's a repeat? Like, what if the same thing happens again? So, and I think the fact that they were forced into that pit stop so early, it left them sort of sweating a little bit, like, well, look, we may end up sort of going down a similar path, because it was, I mean, my Autosport colleague Alex Kalinorkas said that this was basically the British Grand Prix minus the tyre failures, and that's very true, because it was a race where they were all forced into an early stop. They all went to basically manage their tyres, get to the end, and it really sort of did push the Pirelli tyres, I think, to the absolute end of their life, and in terms of what is really possible. But I don't think we can read a huge amount into Mercedes having some added tyre woes here beyond anything else. I think it was, they were in trouble. I think Red Bull were in trouble as well a little bit towards the end. So it's, for both of them, I think it was, it wasn't Mercedes specific, let's say.
There was some missed potential, I guess, for strategy in this race. I mean, we had Mercedes and Max Verstappen starting on the medium tyre, but Red Bull Racing had effectively split their strategies with Alex Albon starting on the soft tyre. And we also had differences in setups as well that was guarding against the rain. Mercedes having added more downforce to the car to guard against wet weather, and Red Bull Racing sort of compromising a bit, still the lower downforce package, but adding on a little bit more than they wanted to, a little bit more than other parts of the field. But a lot of this was ultimately neutralized by that safety car after lap 10, which meant everyone went, or just about everyone, I should say, we'll talk about Pierre Gasly in a moment, went for that hard tire and that long final stint of management. But we did get just a little bit of that potential towards the end of the race, didn't we, with Daniel Ricciardo in the very slippery Renault. They'd 100% gone for the low downforce setup, forgetting about the rain, I suppose. And towards the end of the race, with those hard tyres on the front-running cars wearing away because they were running with more downforce that would have been helpful in the rain, Ricciardo was catching right up to them. In the final few laps, there was a potential for him to actually disrupt the podium. And then with the last lap of his race, he set the fastest lap of the race, which showed that obviously he had a lot of life left still in his tyres, but that striking that compromise between high downforce and low downforce in the conditions as well was quite difficult.
Yeah, it did, definitely. And I think that after the race, obviously we heard the complaints from the front three drivers about their concerns about vibrations and degradation, but Ricciardo was like, yeah, deg's pretty low, like I'm doing okay. And as you said, evidenced by him getting the fastest lap on the final lap of the race. And that was a massively impressive display from him and from Renault. But it did also show that if you really trim the car out and go, look, we're going to go for absolute top speed and really sort of focus on the first sector and final sector, what benefits that offers. I mean, not only is it a rocket ship in a straight line, not only does it mean that you can make all of these like really good passes, but also it means that tyres are so much less of a concern in closing stages. And obviously you never go into a race anticipating that, oh, we're all going to pit on lap 11 and really have to manage to the end. So you can't really sort of gamble on that. But I guess it's an added benefit and an added consideration. And I think Ricciardo, he was probably left rueing the time that he lost behind Pierre Gasly, because he took a little while longer to get ahead of him after Gasly obviously stayed out, as we'll get on to. And you just got to wonder, like, with the amount of time he lost there, did that maybe stunt him at the end and mean that he wasn't close enough to Verstappen to really, really try and take it to the Red Bull, have an attack, and maybe try and get that podium tattoo bet with Cyrilla Beatball across the line?
I've never seen a paddock get around the prospect of a tattoo quite like everyone has this year, but it would be very exciting to see. This had this interesting, and there's a subplot here that's been continuing through the season, effect on the battle for the lead, did Ricciardo, quite aside from the fact that maybe he could have had a podium late in the race, but it was that him being so unusually close to the top three, because it is rare we see anyone kind of become an interloper into that battle. It meant that there was no safety for an extra pit stop for the top three, in particular in this instance, Max Verstappen, because with the tyres wearing, it would have been a pretty straightforward strategy call for Red Bull Racing to bring him in and see what could happen, maybe pull Valtteri Bottas in, for example, to cover him off and see if that could shake the tree a little bit. But yet again, potentially, because it's difficult to know exactly how this might have played out had there not been a safety car, but potentially Red Bull Racing really missing having a rear gunner to Verstappen in this situation to perhaps, let's say, have held up Daniel Ricciardo's charge a little bit, to have slowed him down a little bit. Alex Albon still isn't able to play that role. And as a result, Red Bull Racing was locked in to follow Mercedes, essentially, for the duration of that long second stint. Albon had a better race, I suppose, in this Grand Prix, really on balance, in a car that couldn't really pass the Renaults. But this seems like another example of one of those stinging effects that Red Bull Racing felt quite a lot with Gasly last year before they dropped him.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's only because, I think with Gasly, because Red Bull was that much closer to Mercedes, you could see that Gasly was actually costing them race wins and the chance to really fight with Mercedes. And obviously it's a little bit different this year. So I think the pressure on Albon is maybe a bit reduced, but it's the same principle as you say. It is that if they'd had that rear gunner, if they'd had the second Red Bull in fourth place, as it should have been, then there would have been the buffer to Ricciardo that would have opened up that pit window, given Verstappen the chance to make a second stop and maybe put some pressure on, because right the way through the race, Mercedes were really concerned about the undercut because it is so powerful at Spa. They were really concerned that Verstappen would be in for a second time, and that explained why they told Bottas in the very early stages of the race not to use his overtake, and that they'd agreed not to use it between the two Mercedes cars, because Mercedes needed that in their back pocket just in case Verstappen got close enough and they needed to fend him off. So the lack of a rear gunner meant that Ricciardo, as you said, was just sitting just within Verstappen's pit window. And Red Bull were like, well, we can't really afford to give up track position given how good Ricciardo was going on his tyres as well. So that definitely did complicate things. And I think it also kind of made the race a little bit even more dull for us, because it would have been really cool to have Verstappen go for that second stop, and then Bottas would have probably had to follow suit. And then Hamilton might have gone, well, I can do it as well and go for fast lap and try and get the bonus point and whatever. So there was a real good potential for that. So yeah, a shame, definitely, because I think it would have been cool to see that. And I think it's something that Red Bull, although they're not paying a huge price right now, it is something that is surely just ticking over in the back of their mind.
Let's talk about the driver he swapped seats with this time last year, Pierre Gasly, who was really the only driver to run the opposite or the contra strategy. Sergio Perez did as well, sort of, but he didn't really do much of a job executing it, or the team didn't. We'll talk about him in a second. But Pierre Gasly, the only driver outside the top 10 to start on the hard tyre and end on the medium after a long first stint. I mean, this was always really going to be a one-stop race. The tyres are a step softer this year, but you know, already everyone was clearly gravitating towards the harder tyres, and track position is so important in Formula One, so likely to be a one-stop race. Did it surprise you that he was the only one, that no one else thought to start on the hard tyre and end on the quicker tyre in that management phase for the rest of the top 10?
It did, yeah, and I think we were all very surprised to see that, because we kind of expected that him going on that to I guess, not pass anyone and just sort of sit there and then benefit as people came into pit and him go longer. But it was the complete opposite. I mean, Gasly made a load of really good moves in that opening stint, getting past Sergio Perez, getting past the ailing Charles Leclerc as well, which maybe isn't such a big achievement, but... What the hey? I mean, AlphaTauri, the quickest Italian team this weekend, so good on them. And it's it was, yeah, I thought it was an absolutely brilliant display from him, like to be able to maximize that hard tire so well and really, really, really run well with it. And I know that teams kind of like looked at all three compounds and went, like, none of them were a terrible race tire this weekend, as we've seen in previous races. So they were fairly comfortable about running on all of them. But the hard in particular, I think that was a big surprise to see Gasly start so well on it and run so well on it. And yeah, you've got to maybe think, like, did the safety car like ruin hopes of a top five finish even? I'm not sure. It was, yeah, massively impressive. And I think that I just think, like, Pierre Gasly, like, he's been one of the real stars of the season for me. Obviously, a year on from the loss of his friend Antoine Hubert as well, I think it was a very emotionally charged weekend for Gasly. And he just put all of that into a brilliant display and really deserves a huge amount of credit for it.
I thought really good as well, interesting in this strategic sense, was that AlphaTauri, A, didn't fold to the pressure, I suppose, to pit, because by that point, Gasly was up to eighth. So they could easily have banked what could have been, you know, a couple of points, knowing that the second half of this race was going to be more about management than aggression. So not only did they not bow to that pressure, but banked on Gasly being able to make something of it. Interesting too, looking at this strategy in particular, the medium tire at the end of the race proved very effective for him, because while everyone else was managing, he was able to really push it a lot more. It seems like, as much as one stop is so preferable in Formula One these days because track position is so important, that in a midfield that is quite tightly contested, no one tried anything different really in this race. We are going to talk about Sergio Perez in a second, but he's barely different because he really only pitted a couple of laps after the safety car. It was a very nothing strategy. But the fact that no one tried anything is in some respects surprising, given that, okay, overtaking is difficult in Formula One, but not so much at Spa if you're running a bit more aggressively, as Gasly showed.
Yeah, exactly. And you do kind of think it would have been nice to see some of the teams maybe try that two-stop or try and make things a little bit different and shake things up. And again, with the undercut being so powerful, I was maybe a little bit surprised that more teams didn't try that out and try and roll the dice a little bit. But I think that it kind of... it just speaks to where F1 is right now, that ultimately the track position is the most important thing. And they're all going to sort of just get home on one stop if they absolutely can. And yeah, it's a shame, because I think we do want to see a bit more variety. It is cool seeing sort of teams like try that two stop and trying sort of claw back positions and really make that the softer tire and the tire delta pay. And that's what we saw Gasly do, obviously, with his switch to mediums for that second stint. Like, he was flying, and that was really, really cool. But yeah, ultimately, if everyone's on the same page and if everyone's kind of boxed into a corner where there's a safety car and you have to pit then, otherwise you're a bit cooked, as was the case for Sergio Perez. Like, it's, yeah, it's disappointing. We want to see a bit more variety just to shake things up.
There's been a lot of talk this season about Racing Point for contentious reasons, depending on your point of view, I suppose. This is meant to be the car that is, you know, maybe third quickest, second quickest, fourth quickest, depending on the circuit and their execution. This is also a circuit this team normally does extremely well at, but pretty much from the off, Racing Point fumbled this whole weekend. They ended up finishing 9th and 10th. Perez and Stroll on fundamentally the same strategy, Perez stopping after the safety car, just after the safety car for some reason rather than during it. They're worried about tyre life. These difference of laps made minimal difference in the end to the result. It's strange, though, and this is something we've touched on a couple of times in this show, that a team that is normally so precise in execution when they've been in this battle for the midfield with limited resources trying to squeeze the most out of the car, this weekend, for example, used too many soft tires in practice, which left them with not enough in qualifying, which meant they had one run in Q3, which meant they qualified out of place, which meant they finished out of place. It's sort of almost what was feared, wasn't it, that more resources might make them sloppy. Okay, this is one race, we don't want to judge them completely, but is this a difficult transition up towards being contenders for this team?
Maybe, yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it, and maybe a bit difficult to hone in on one race and say that sort of is indicative of where they are right now. But Spa is always where, obviously, the Old Force India team traditionally always went well. You think back to 2009 and Giancarlo Fisichella's pole position run, and it's just been a great track for the Silverstone outfit. I mean, even Racing Point's first ever Grand Prix in 2018 following the collapse of Force India. It was even there. That's when I believe they locked out the second row of the grid, and we saw Ocon sort of having a look up the inside of both Hamilton and Vettel on the run to Les Combes. And it was, I think he said, like another 30 metres and he'd have sent it. And that had been such a cool story. And heading into this weekend with such a radically different car concept for this year, both drivers were asked, like, well, do you think we're going to lose sort of some of the, I guess, sort of old Force India success at Spa? And they said no. They said, we think we'll still run well here and this should suit our car. And that just wasn't the case. And as you say, sort of the operational errors made it very obvious that things weren't entirely perfectly run this weekend. Looking at the medium runs in Q2, I mean, there have been races this year where they've been so far ahead, they've been able to run mediums in Q2 and comfortably get through. And that's crazy for a team that has sort of been like really mired in F1's midfield for so long. So that was a massive come down that they had. They ran the mediums and they were like, look, we don't stand a chance getting through to Q3, so therefore we need to go on to the softs. And then, yeah, in terms of strategy, like, it just made no sense. And everyone was kind of going, well, what are they doing with Perez here? Like, if you're someone like Pierre Gasly, for example, and even to some extent, I guess, the top three drivers, like, if they'd have said, we're not going to pit under the safety car, I want to keep going on this stint to get a fresher set of tyres later on, then that makes complete sense. I mean, Gasly showed perfectly, I think, what you could do with that. But with Perez, like, it was just a case of they kept him out for another 7 laps. I'm like, okay, in you come now. And then obviously he drops last, and he did a good fight back, admittedly. But also that Racing Point, like, it is so much quicker than obviously the Ferrari power cars this weekend. So siding up the order was never really in doubt. But yeah, you just kind of think, I think it's just a weekend where they've got to sort of look at what happened and say, look, we may have this really, really quick car, but I'm not sure they've really maximised what they're doing with it so far this season. I mean, you've got McLaren are now up to third place in the Constructors' Championship, for example. And that is really where Racing Point should be comfortably, even without the points penalty.
Weird as well that if the concern was making it to the end, that the team, in deciding that it was only going to pit one car, didn't choose Sergio Perez as the car to pit behind the safety car and go that long stint, given he's the driver that is, of course, renowned for stretching the tyres as long as possible. I thought that was strange.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, I mean, Lance Stroll has, I think, been excellent so far this season. I think he deserves a lot of credit for what he's done. But as you say, like, Perez, he's a tyre whisperer. Like, he really knows how to make him work. So if you want anyone to maximise the tyre advantage, surely Checo would be the guy. But maybe that's what they thought. Maybe they're like, well, if anyone's going to, like, yeah, we've dropped the ball here, but if anyone's going to make the most of it, it will be Checo. I don't know. But yeah, very good point. Very strange pick.
Yeah, well, look, it's one to put behind them. Finally, if we're going to talk about races being put behind, we've got to talk about Ferrari briefly. I mean, their worst weekend in a decade, I think it's fair to say, since 2010, I think, to finish out of the points on merit for no reason other than you're slow is not regularly Ferrari territory. It's been unpacked in lots of different ways why the car is so slow. Fundamentally, it's a lack of power for that agreement reached with the FIA over the off-season. The car is also obviously not very good. But even when it comes to the fact, and they predicted they weren't going to be powerful this weekend, maybe not as bad as they ended up being. They didn't think that was going to be the case, but they knew it was going to be difficult. At no point did it feel like they were sort of hunkering down and just going to try and squeeze the most out of it. I mean, Charles Leclerc starting outside the top 10 on the soft tyre. You know, to essentially commit to a two-stop strategy with a car that can't pass, that's not fast enough, seems very, let's say, left field, doesn't it?
I think that's putting it very kindly, yeah. Leclerc said that even when he had DRS open, he wasn't matching the power that cars not using DRS had and the straight line speed, which is that just shows just how bad that Ferrari is in a straight line. And he said going into the weekend, we expect to suffer, but I don't think anyone quite saw it being as bad as it was. Because, yeah, starting on the soft tyre, that did allow him to make a really good start. And he was running as high as eighth at one point, and we sort of like saw Ferrari overtake a Racing Point. I was like, hang on a minute, like, this is a complete plot twist. And then I think he lost something like 4 positions in 5 laps and very quickly dropped backwards. And yeah, Ferrari spent 5 laps of the whole race with a car in the top 10. And all 5 of those were Charles Leclerc. Sebastian Vettel never ran in the points, which is just, it's remarkable. And it's astonishing how dramatic this come down has been. I think the reasons for it are pretty clear to sort of add up and see. And I think that, as you say, though, if Ferrari know the situation they're facing, they've just got to basically roll the dice and play to what strengths they can. And we saw that at Silverstone when for the 70th anniversary of Grand Prix, when Charles Leclerc ran that one-stop strategy that everyone thought was completely out of the question. But he made it work, and that was fantastic. And again, that got him, fourth place? Same thing Sebastian Vettel did in Spain. Ferrari got into a position where they were like, well, we either pit you and you've got to try and overtake these cars with a car that can't overtake, or we'll keep you out, you get a trap position. At worst, you're just going to drop back, but it's worth the risk. And that absolutely paid off handsomely. Like, it got him seventh place. And I think that is where Ferrari have got to be creative and got to think outside the box. And if they'd have started on both cars on hards, for example, and done similar to what Gasly did, that could have, I think, at least got them into the top 10 for a little bit, got some trap position. And then you maybe have on some more safety cars or just things working in your favour. But the way it was, like, they literally, I mean, as you say, like, Leclerc literally ran on the same strategy as the top 10 runners in a car that is just, it can't manage its tyres, it can't overtake anybody. So what is the point? Like, what does that achieve? And I just think it's crazy. Like, Ferrari, I think they've got to, we heard yet more chatter between the drivers and the pit wall about strategy, and Leclerc saying, yeah, well, the two strategies you're offering me, plan B and plan C, they're basically the same. So, like, what are we going to do? And it's such a mess there right now. It doesn't make sense. Like, it doesn't make sense why they just go, we're very weak in all these areas, but we're just going to accept that. That's what we do.
Is it the worst possible situation? They've got a car that's not very competitive. They don't, I mean, they understand the root cause of it, but don't fully understand how to ameliorate it in some way that makes them somewhat competitive, and then have to rely on strategy. I mean, if there's any weak spot in Ferrari, it seems to be strategy. And we've seen, as you touched on there, in multiple races now, Sebastian Vettel just getting annoyed in the car that there doesn't seem to be a proactive strategy at play. And look, I guess to be fair to the Ferrari pit wall in this race, it didn't seem like there was a lot that they could have done strategy-wise to make that car better. But it does feel a little bit deer in the headlights. And in an area that's not typically a Ferrari strength, you wonder what can be gained from, you know, particularly the next couple of races, which are going to be similar levels of pain for them, I suspect.
They are, yeah. And for their home races, Monza and then Mugello, Ferrari's 1,000th race, the title sponsor, they've got a Ferrari grandstand. We're going to have fans at the race for the first time this year. And it's all just like, that's very concerning that they are going to be in they're going to be in a world of pain. Like, there's no other way to describe it, I don't think. Like, it's going to be very, very difficult for them. And they do just need to try and find these areas they can maximise and exploit to try and get some kind of advantage. And right now, it does appear to be that the only way they sort of, like, stumble into a good strategy is when the drivers go, look, let's do this. Like, Vettel, as we saw in Spain, was fantastic at managing the race. But that's not his job. Like, he should have Ferrari telling him what's going on. There should be the confidence. And again, you've got to, both parties have said there's no tension, there's no added sort of like frostiness between them. But Vettel, I mean, he has not been well treated by Ferrari. And we saw again in second practice last weekend that Vettel didn't say a word to Ferrari on the radio throughout the session. And it's a similar thing that I think has happened in qualifying a couple of times this year. There's not a word of back and forth. Like, it's all just one way Ferrari talking to the driver. And again, Vettel said, like, oh, you can't read much into that. There's no added tension. I see the guys all the time, and, like, we talk all the time in the garage. So to be a bit quiet, like, what's the big deal? But I just think it is noteworthy. It's strange. And it is just, I think it sums up where they are right now. Like, there's not really any redeeming aspects of that car or that team in its performances right now. And I think it is, it's a big shame, because I think we do want to see a competitive Ferrari, but also I think that they at least could try and be a little bit more creative and sort of think outside the box. Like, if they're not going to be quick on track, if they're not going to overtake cars, how else can we try and haul this car up the grid? And really, strategy is like their only option right now, and getting a bit lucky. At Spa, I don't think they would have scored any points, even if they had started on hards and fought their way up the order. But, I mean, they might have beaten the Ferrari customer teams, at least. Like, there might be an Alfa Romeo with Kimi Raikkonen taking his time, as we all very well know from that Sky Sports advert. But they didn't. And it's just like, it's, I think, a huge come down from where they were last year.
The biggest come down, you might say. From winning in 2019 to being 5 seconds from just about the back of the pack It was all pain for Ferrari, and it probably will be for a few races yet, but mostly pleasure for Mercedes, certainly if you're Lewis Hamilton, after a pretty straightforward Belgian Grand Prix, and it was a pleasure to look back on it with you, Luke.
Nice one, mate. Thank you.
That was Autosport F1 reporter Luke Smith. The Strategy Report is powered by Apex Race Manager, the mobile race management simulator. Play it for free on iOS and Android devices. If you want more Strategy Report, you can get every episode by subscribing on Google and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on your favourite podcast app, plus we're on all of your socials. And if you like what you've heard, we'd love it if you could give us a rating and a review to help other F1 fans find the show. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast. My name's Michael Laminato. You can look me up at Michael Laminato on Twitter. And brace yourselves, Ferrari fans, because next week I'll be back to review the Italian Grand Prix.